happens. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see a pointer here, but I'm sorry.
I guess that's
it.
Yeah.
So I guess you just would click to go forward, or there's these arrow keys forward and back, something
yeah.
like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, you're right. Okay. And then I could just wing it.
Dr. Hurley, it's the back end of his pen. See, like this, it goes that way. See, it's on the other end from where the writing is. Yeah. Got it? One minute from where I came in the front door to get to this room.
And then go to the bigger room first and then the other corner.
Very big. Thank you.
any information. We saw
the four the titles and everything, and so I think 99% sure it's there.
But I think it's in case I bring this.
Oh, good. That's always a good idea. Okay, thank you.
Sometimes we submit like manuscript or something. They have a confirmation submission successful.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
No,
the APHA website always drives me crazy. I mean, it's not very user friendly sometimes.
Hello.
Hi.
Let me get you a speaker for that microphone real quick.
Okay, sure.
2 minutes.
Sure. 3. Okay. Yeah, I guess we didn't even test it. Does it not have a speaker? Oh, gosh. Okay. Yes, that would be a good thing.
Hello?
The microphone stopped working this week.
Oh, okay.
It's the speaker in the ceiling, so we'll put it just the speaker right there.
Okay.
Plug in this cord and tape it down, I should say.
I'm sorry?
So once I plug in this cord and tape it down, I should say.
Okay.
Test 1, 2. Test 1, 2. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, sorry. The speakers just decided to stop working.
Yeah, not a good thing. Thank you. Hello, and welcome to this session on innovative strategies for infant mortality prevention among high-risk populations. And thank you to everyone who made it here so early in the morning. This convention center is, I've been told, it's 9/10 of a mile from one end to the other. So I'm sure more people will be finding their way as we get started. But we do have a full slate, and I'm going to get started right away. I just wanted to let you know that the fifth speaker on the program called me about a week ago and had a family emergency and was unable to come. But that just means that the other four have a little more time to talk. So that's a good thing, and maybe we'll have a little more time for discussion at the end. And please welcome our first speaker, Dr. Consuela Duncan. She's a Senior Assistant Vice President, Health and Hospitals Corporation of New York City, and she'll be talking about innovative strategies to improve neonatal outcomes in New York City public hospitals. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone, and I bring you greetings from New York City, the Big Apple. I'm presenting the innovative strategies to improve neonatal outcomes in New York City Public Health and Hospitals Corporation, and I guess everybody has to have that. I just want to give you an overview of who we are. We're a public health corporation, the largest municipal hospital system in the country. We have 11 hospitals. We have long-term care, 4 long-term care, 6 diagnostic and treatment centers. Some of them have up to 8 clinics, a certified home care, managed care organization with 310,000 enrollees, and we're one of the 10 top in New York City. Over 100 community health clinics all over the 5 boroughs that the City Department of Health has given us to increase the standard of care, equipment, and care. And we have affiliations with all major New York medical centers like Columbia School of Physicians and Surgeons, New York University, and SUNY, and others, and over 39,000 employees. As you can see, we're all over the 5 boroughs, and all these different colors signify the different networks. So in the Bronx, Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. And our networks are divided in such a way that there's a continuum of care from hospital to clinics to long-term care and then back. What role do we play? As I have mentioned, we're public hospitals, so you can just imagine we're taking care of millions of New Yorkers, of which 400 are uninsured. Our discharges are high. We have 11 perinatal centers, hence my presentation. And we have over 23,000 deliveries almost every year. Our outpatient, our ED visits, we have 6 level 1 trauma centers, again, across the 5 boroughs. So we have 30% of the city's trauma services, also in terms of mental health. I'm sure you've heard about Bellevue Hospital. It's always a psych hospital, but it's really not. We only have like 400 beds. The rest are all medical, surgical, and trauma. And we also have the city's chemical dependency inpatient capacity, and that's really growing because we're doing a lot of initiatives for that and our nursing facility. We have 11 designated AIDS centers. We also provide care to the correctional services like the Rikers Island. And we have very diverse patient population, a lot of new immigrants, and we have to translate our patient education 13 to 14 languages every time we roll out something. Now, going back to why I'm presenting this is because we have been designated by the New York State Department of Health to be perinatal centers, of which we have 3 different levels. We have 2 level 4s, which is the highest regional. And I understand New York State is the only one that has a level 4. Everyone else in the country has level 3, 2, and 1. We have 7 level 3s and 2 level 2s. The difference is that level 4 has a very high services that we provide. and level 3 may or may not, and level 2 has the lowest services for any perinatal centers. So what we did was we split all our hospitals into two, half goes to Bellevue, half goes to Jacoby, and we just transfers both the maternal and the NICU. And statistics-wise, you could see that we admit in the NICU over 5,000 every year, and our births less than 2,000 grams and less than 500 is over 2,000. Our infants dead, we've really been very, very conscious of that. It went down from 75 to 40, and maternal deaths from 13 to 3. And I know one death is very serious, but I think we're really getting there because one of our goals is to have zero deaths. Now, my role presentation, developmental care, we call it WE Care, W-E-E, care. And so that's sort of our motto, developmental care. And what's developmental care? What we're trying to do is to mimic the mother's wound, but no single approach is effective for all infants. So what we do is we do an intensive assessment and then provide that care to each of the individual infants. Also, we also try to provide an environment that will decrease the infant stress, pain, and enhance health. And definitely, the parents and families have always been part of it since we started. So what are the key elements of developmental care? The first is the control of the environment, which is very tangible, the sound, light, and activity. And I'll go further into that, which would then address auditory, tactile, and vestibular. We also are a proponent of clustering of care. So what we've done is with our new NICUs, we develop them into like pedals, and the nurse's station is in the middle, and each pedal would have a 4 to 6 incubators where there are two nurses inside, and it's self-contained. The equipment is there, medications, and everything else. So they stay practically in the those little clusters or pedals that we call them, except for their lunch or their breaks. We also use a lot of supportive positioning equipment, which we'll show you, and we do individual assessment and interventions, not just for the NICU but babies, but also for the mothers. And we've integrated the family facilitation of parenting and the kangaroo care. For those who do not know that, we'll show you a picture where it's skin-to-skin bonding of both, either a mother or a father. And we've been getting a lot of fathers who are proponents of kangaroo care. So the question is the premature infant capable of reacting to the environment? And the answer is definitely yes. Just to give you an overview, the infant sensory development at 25 weeks, the major structures on the sound level is in place. And it reacts to any kind of stress testing or auditory system that you provide externally. And the suck reflex is seen at that week. When you look at the vision, it's at 24 weeks, and the infant could really track horizontal and vertical type of vision at 1 foot. So what are the common composition of the delivery and NICU environment? It's very interesting that we all take for granted. We have the sound, light, staff facility, then we have the touch, bed warmers, positioning, handling, and then the parents. This is one of our brand new birthing centers. Most of our hospital, or I'd say 100%, have been renovated in terms of the maternity system. And this is our NICU. It's kind of cluttered, but that's one of the ones that we have developed, which is also a new one where everything is in it, and we're using the giraffe incubator, which is very expensive. It's $30,000, but everything is in it. Now, I just want to give you a review of what we all may or may not know, and it didn't occur to me until after this was presented to us and we read about it. The sound environment, you know, this is the quiet, the background, annoying, hearing loss, and painful. And oftentimes we subject our infants to this either unintentionally. And if you look at the IV pumps, these are sound is measured by decibels. And, you know, writing on top of the incubator would mean that, oh, it's nothing. But it does annoy the infants. And the vacuum, you know, when the housekeeping does it, the bottle on the incubator is very, very strong in sound, the door metal, and then the telephone. ringing. Now the standard for sound in the NICU is 45, 40 and below decibels. Now the light in the NICU, a painful stimuli, intrauterine, it's very dim with hardly any light. Once you remove them out of that, all of a sudden they have the overhead light, which is brighter than 80. For the light, it's 60 foot candles. It's measured by foot candles or LUX, lux, and it has to be below 60. So that's the first thing the infant sees, 80, and it's so bright. And then the home is this. When the eyes are closed, they still have 38%, which I thought is very interesting too, because none of us would think that this is really a big thing for the infants. And light in the NICU also increases agitation, the weight loss may affect retinal development and decrease O2 saturation. Now, again, for the light, if you look at the foot candles, you could see 0 to 60 is normal, but as soon as it hits 90, it becomes painfully bright. And again, you look at the foot candles, and when you look at the traditional NICU light levels, the overhead is 80 to 100. Window sunlight, which we thought, oh, it's good for the infant, but it's 100, and it's very, very painfully bright. And the individual light for each of the NICU is also very high. So the environmental control, again, when it comes to light and sound, depends on the staff. The staff is the one that could make this happen. 1 to 6 foot candlelight is recommended for the day and 0.5 at night. What are the different interventions to reduce light exposure in the NICU? Again, this is a sample of our very expensive giraffe incubator. And this is a regular nut giraffe incubator. So we monitor the light. We have a little system that you could monitor the light levels, and the staff are very aware of that. We also cover the eyes of the infant when they do the exam or do a procedure. We make sure that incubators is positioned in such a way that it's not direct sunlight. We decrease the overhead light so that each one will have an individual light to only shine on that particular parts of the body that they're going to do some exam. And we minimize the use of the overhead light by putting dimmers. We also put shades on the windows, and we have the covers for each of the incubators. Now, before I go to this, I just want you to know that for the sound, we have two types. The one that we could afford, because, you know, we're public hospitals, we put it on the wall, and when the staff's voice starts to raise, it starts blinking. And as the voice keeps going up, it keeps blinking and blinking until the voice decreases and then it stops blinking. Now, the more expensive one is, it has an ear-type shape, which is a big ear that you put on the wall, and as the noise level goes up, the light goes from the lower ear all the way up to the higher ear, and it won't stop unless the noise goes down. I don't have a picture of that, because we weren't able to buy that. That's like $900 to $1,000. So the anticipated outcome and goals that we are looking at is the decreased length of stay, hospital costs, morbidity, increased feeding, weight gain, and neurodevelopment at 24 months. We started this in the late summer and fall of 2007. So we don't have real hard data on these indicators, but we should be getting it by the end of this year. What are the components of the developmental or we care? We did a pre-assessment on all of our 11 NICUs twice, one by our own facility and the second by the vendors that we hired to do our training. We did education and training for all of our staff. We did buy all the supplies and equipment that I'll show you, and we did a lot of construction in terms of the sound from the ceiling, and then the what they call this, the floor, and also the lights, dimmer of all the lights, and the windows. So when we measured initially, it's very high. If you look at the sound level, that's the lowest we have, which is higher than 40, and the highest. I mean, I have to tell you, this is our biggest challenge, because people tend to speak louder, and even our light, this is a little lower, but it's still very high. So what we did is we did an educational training. The first is a seven-day, eight-hour staff with the preemie a day, and then the vendor then goes to all of the hospitals, one, since we're on 12-hour shift, before 7, like 5 in the morning, and they capture all of those who did not go to the 8-hour training. And we involve everyone, radiologists, residents, housekeeping, everyone who comes and goes and touches the NICU. And this is very interesting. The one-day training, what we did was we put the doctors, the nurses, the nurse practitioners, housekeeping, and everyone into this positioning, so they would have two partners, and this would be the neonate, and they would then experience being a neonate going into this different environmental equipment. This is a nurse practitioner, no, this is a doctor, and this is a nurse practitioner, this is an RN. And all of them are really, for the first time, they really understood what it is like to have this type of training and to have the babies go into this positioning because they had that experience. And these are the different equipment that we bought. These are like the bundle bandies, the cozy bandies. And as the infant grow, we then change the equipment into less and less motherly type of an environment. We have, at the bottom of this is like a jelly foam that mimics the mother's wound. This is the kangaroo care where we provide chairs next to the incubator where the mother and the father can stay, and we have it open 24/7. And I have to tell you, our breastfeeding rate went up to 70%. And we could see the difference. It's all anecdotal, but we're getting there. So today, these are the stuff that we have accomplished. Our education has gone up. We have this summit. We call it summit. We meet every quarter with all the leadership and the champions. And they come up with their goals and let us know their challenges and their successes. And it's really exciting when they see that they've met their goals. All our equipment and supplies, we have everybody's using it 100%, and we did a post-assessment of the light, and construction has started, although it's a little delayed, and these are the PI projects that we are looking at. And we have a task force that met quarterly to report all of this progress. So, post-program implementation, we did improve in terms of our sound. And as I said, sound is our challenge because people have the tendency to speak loud. So what we did was we put signs out on the door. And the light also went down. So in summary, what we have on all of our, or most of our NICU is a signage, a noise reduction. We took out the cell phones, and the alarms are responded quicker. We removed the sound, and we just put on the lights, so the staff are now attuned to the lights versus the sound. We also in-service them on the bit-to-bit effects of the monitor, so we removed that sound on the bit-to-bit, and we just put the light, and the staff are now getting acclimated, or they're all used to that. And we do spot decibel checks. And all of this we've been doing, and the staff are religiously watching them. Now, the giraffe incubator, which all of our NICU has one or two, and our goal is to have at least 8 per NICU. The care, as you can see, these smoothies are the little, pacifier. And this is the book where you have all of the different equipment, which is very interesting. And as the infant progressed, we changed the pacifiers. And these are the things that we have had, and thank you.
Thank you very much. That was great. I think we'll hold questions to the end in the interest of time. And I'd like to introduce Dr. Lee Zhang, who's the Director of Health Data and Research for the Mississippi State Health Department. Okay, you can come up and, you know, if you know how to click all this. Please, go ahead. Next presentation, I guess. And he's speaking.